tasks, yes, certainly, Janssen replied. They would make my job much easier. Before either of the other two could speak, he added, If they're kept under strict control, that's the hard part, keeping them under control. Can they be controlled well enough to do only what they're programmed to do without running wild? Morgenthau asked. Yes, certainly, but you've got to be very careful with the programming. It's like those old fairy tales about getting three wishes, and the wishes always backfire on you. We'll have Dr. Kristin Cardenas to be in charge of the nanotechnology group, Eberle said. Janssen's ash-blonde brows rose a respectful few centimeters. Cardenas? She's here? She will be in a few months. That's good. That's extremely good. Then it's settled, Eberle said. You will work with Cardenas to draw up guidelines for using nanomachines. Janssen nodded enthusiastically. I'll be glad to. I don't like it, Morgenthau said, grim-faced. It's too dangerous. Not if we can keep them under control, said Eberle. Janssen got to his feet. As I said, it's a two-edged sword. Cardenas is the top expert, though. We'll be lucky to have her. I don't like it, said Morgenthau, once the engineer had left. Nanomachines are dangerous, evil. They're tools, Eberle countered, tools that could be useful to us. But no buts, Eberle snapped. I've made my decision. Dr. Cardenas will be welcome as long as she works under our guidelines. Looking doubtful, almost fearful, Morgenthau said, I'll have to discuss this with my superiors in Amsterdam. Eberle glared at her. The Holy Disciples asked me to direct things here. I won't be second-guessed by a board of elders sitting back on Earth. Those elders asked me to assist you, said Morgenthau, and to make certain you didn't stray off the path of righteousness. Eberle leaned back in his desk chair. So that's it. She's the link back to Amsterdam. She's here to control me. Keeping his voice calm, he said to Morgenthau, Well, I've made my decision. Dr. Cardenas will be joining us in 3 months, and there's nothing that Amsterdam or Atlanta or anyone else can do about it. She looked far less than pleased. You still have to convince Wilmot to let you introduce nanotechnology into the habitat. Eberle stared at her for a silent moment, then, Yes, so I do.
Confidential report, eyes only, to M. Eberle, from R. Morgenthau, subject, surveillance of living quarters. Dr. Eberle, I discussed the problem of installing surveillance cameras in every living space in the habitat with H. Janssen of engineering. He informed me that microcameras, no larger than a pinhead, have been developed for the probes that the planetary scientists plan to send to Titan. Such cameras are also used by the medical department for examining patients' innards. They can be manufactured in large numbers with existing facilities. Janssen suggests having the medical department initiate a program of spraying each apartment in the habitat with a broad-based disinfectant or aerosol antibiotic under the guise of preventing the outbreak of airborne diseases. The cameras would be installed in each apartment during the spraying procedure. This program will require the cooperation of several lower-level personnel from the medical, maintenance, engineering, and security departments. It will also require a significant amount of time to complete. If you can recruit satisfactory personnel for this program, I suggest we begin the spraying effort as soon as feasible. In addition, Viborg has successfully tapped into the communications net and is now routinely recording phone conversations and the video programming that individuals watch in their homes. The amount of information is enormous, as you may well imagine. Viborg will need guidelines from you as to who should be monitored on a regular basis. He will also need personnel and/or automated equipment to accomplish said monitoring.
Departure plus 268 days. And this is where we grow most of our fruit, Holly was saying as she and Chris Cardenas strolled leisurely through the orchard's long straight rows of trees. Oranges on their left, limes on their right. Grapefruit and lemons were behind them. They were approaching apples, pears, and peaches. The trees were lined up as precisely as marching cadets. Cardenas had arrived aboard the Habitat the day before. Now she seemed lost in wonder. "I haven't seen a tree in so many years." She turned and laughed, head upturned. "Not one tree since I left Cellini, and here you've got a whole orchard full of them. It's like California, almost." Holly asked, "There aren't any trees on Ceres?"
"Not a one," replied Cardenas, a bright smile on her youthful face. "Nothing but hydroponics tanks."
"We have hydroponics farms, too," Holly said, "as a backup in case any troubles come up with the crops."
"And bees!" Cardenas exclaimed. "Aren't those bees?"
"Uh-huh. We need them for pollinating the trees. They make their hives in those white boxes over there." Holly pointed toward a set of square white skeps sitting among the trees. "Laughing," she added, "would you believe? One of my hardest problems was finding a couple of beekeepers." Cardenas looked at her with those brilliant blue eyes of hers. "You know, you really don't realize how much you miss open spaces and trees and, well, even grass, for God's sake. Not until you see something like this again." They walked on through the orchard, heading for the farms out beyond the trees. Everly had given Holly the task of showing Dr. Cardenas around the habitat. He called it orientation. Holly called it fun. As they walked through the neatly aligned rows of trees, they heard a thin, quavering voice off to their left, singing.
"Who's that?" Cardenas wondered.
Holly ducked through the low branches of a young peach tree and cut toward the edge of the orchard, Cardenas close behind her. The orchard ended in an earthen embankment that led down to the irrigation canal. Water flowed smoothly through the sloping concrete walls of the canal. Up ahead of them, they saw a solitary man lugging a double armful of sticks and leafy bushes, singing in a high, scratchy voice. Spanish, Holly thought. It sounds like a Spanish folk song.
"Hello!"
Cardenas called to the man. He dropped his burden and squinted through the late afternoon sunlight at them. Holly saw that he was elderly. No, he looked old. Lean body, half bent with age, skinny arms, wispy white hair that floated about his head like a halo, scraggly dead white beard. She had never seen a truly old person before. He wore a droopy shirt that had once been white, sleeves rolled up above his elbows, and shapeless baggy blue jeans.
"Hola!"
he called back to them. The two women approached him.
"We heard you singing," Holly said.
"It was very lovely," Cardenas added.
"Thank you," said the man. "I am Diego Alejandro Ignacio Romero. My friends call me Don Diego because of my age. I am not truly a nobleman."
The women introduced themselves. Then Holly asked, "You must work for the maintenance department, right?" Don Diego smiled, revealing perfect teeth.
"My occupation is in the communications department. On Earth, I taught history, or tried to."
"What are you doing here, then?"
"The church was not happy with my studies of the Counter-Reformation and the Inquisition."
"No, I mean working out here by the canal."
"Oh, this is my hobby. I am attempting to create a little wilderness."
He gestured along the canal, and Holly saw that there were bushes and small trees set up haphazardly along the sloping, packed earth banks. Someone had moved a few good-sized rocks here and there as well.
"Wilderness?"
"Yes," said Don Diego. "This habitat is too neat, too ordered. People need something more natural than rows of trees planted precisely 2.5 meters apart."
Cardenas laughed. "A nature trail.
See, yes, a nature trail. Built by hand, I am afraid, because nature is a stranger to this place."
"Why did you sign up for this mission?" Cardenas asked.
Don Diego pulled a checkered handkerchief from his shirt pocket and mopped his brow. "To help build a new world, of course. And perhaps to teach anyone who expressed an interest in history, if I am allowed."
"You'd like to teach?"
I was professor of Latin American history at the University of Mexico until I was